Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. In this episode, I'm going to cover 2 weeks, because I didn't read many comic books because I had a family thing come up where my dad came up to visit, and he had this swelling of the knee that caused him not able to walk, and we had to call an ambulance because we couldn't move him. He was in excruciating pain. And when they diagnosed him up here at urgent care and then again at the hospital, they thought it was an acute gout flare-up. But it was a misdiagnosis because we got him well enough to drive him back home to New Mexico. And once we got there, we took him to the rheumatologist specialist, and he had an infection. And that doctor said immediately he drained the knee. And he said, "This isn't gout." He said, "This is an infection." He says, "You have to have surgery immediately." So we had to, once we were in New Mexico, we had to, you know, drive him to the hospital again and then get him checked in the hospital and then have surgery the same day. They didn't know at the time what it was, but they thought it was a staph infection. But after a whole week in the hospital and all the blood work and all the isolation to make sure that the infection didn't spread, turned out to be a strep virus in his knee, and we got him out of the hospital, and that's when I came back home, and they checked him into a nursing rehab center where he's going to rehab for several weeks until he can be mobile again or actually move or do some kind of walking, like on a walker, because he still has issues walking. So it's been a long couple of weeks, and he's had some relapses and pain, and today he had a really good day, which is good, but it's been a rough roller coaster of a ride for my family. And luckily my brother, you know, when I left, my brother went down there to help for a couple of days, so hopefully we're past the hurdle and I can resume life as normal, hopefully. And hopefully by Thanksgiving he will be able to move around on a walker and be home instead of at the rehab center. So yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed. But that's where what's been going on, and I haven't read very many comics, but I still keep track of everything that I did read. So I'm going to talk about 2 weeks worth of books. From the week beginning, 10-19-2015, and it's going to go to the end of 11-1-2015. There's not a lot on there. So for that first week, I read a total of 14 books. And the ratings were as follows. Uses the Netflix rating. 5, I love it. 4, I really like it. 3, I like it. 2, I didn't like it. And 1, I hated it. And there were no 2s or 1s like usual. Last time there were a couple of 2s with the Alien Legion, but that's a rarity. We'll start at the bottom. Well, here's the breakdown. We had 1 Action Lab, 1 Dark Horse, 7 DC, 1 Image, 4 Marvel, and 1 Titan Comics. So a total of 14 comics that first week. Starting at the bottom, we had from Titan Comics, Kronos Commandos. This was like a time adventure that had to do with a race between the Americans and the Nazis to get technology and find this device. And it was pretty much them chasing us in the current time and us chasing the Nazis in the past and losing a lot of soldiers except for this main sergeant character. But it was an interesting, the artwork was interesting, the story was pretty good. It just didn't have enough depth where I really, really enjoyed it. But I did like it, and if there is a sequel to this, because I do cover this later on, this was just issue 1, I will probably invest in another sequel just to see where it goes. The next one was Saints. It was a really weird Image comic, and I didn't think I ordered it, but I did. I didn't care for the artwork. The story was weird, but it was weird enough for me to like it. But it was one that I was on the fence with, and I didn't order issue two. So I didn't pick it up. But this is really weird. This is by Sean Lewis, which is supposedly award-winning playwright of The American Life, and artist Ben Mackie. And Ben Mackie, I didn't care for his artwork, but it's an art style that as you kind of read and read and read, it'll kind of grow on you, I believe. But what the premise of this is, it says Dexter style action collides with picturesque sensibility in this crime horror series for mature readers. Blaze, Lucy, and Sebastian discover a holy war is erupting. That part I did like. And it opens up with one of them actually part of this. He's like a roadie or so for this rock band, and that part I liked. But then there was a lot of weirdness that went on, and but it looks like a battle between heaven and hell with a lot of craziness in between. And if I didn't already get so many books, I would probably be curious enough to see where this was going, because it did leave a lot of questions, and they were interesting ones. But I decided not to get the second issue for this, but I did like it, so I gave it a 3 out of 5. Going back up from 4 out of 5, I got the next one, Midnight Society, The Black Lake. It was the final issue from Dark Horse that has to do with this group of adventurers, especially this main character is a female that is going after the Loch Ness Monster, trying to discover what that is. I don't want to give away a lot of the reveals, but you learn a lot about this female character, and she has some special abilities, and a lot of the people in the group have special abilities. And there was a lot of setup in issue one with shrinking and weird stuff that they never really resolved. But the art was beautiful. Let me get the artist for that, so you have the art. The art was really so. Yeah, it was a really good read. So that was Midnight Society, and it makes, because it's titled Midnight Society colon The Black Lake, it makes it sound like there's a like this was a sequel. It even felt like it might be a sequel to another series, but I can't find the predecessor. I would get another one. This was by Drew Johnson. He actually wrote it and drew it, which is impressive. And there is a trade available if you want to check it out. But it's really cool. If you like Proof, or any of those that go after mythical beings like Bigfoot or the Yeti or stuff like that. And this is a unique group of individuals that go after those types of beings. And it worked really well. So that was Midnight Society, The Black Lake, number 4. It concluded the series. The next one was Gravedigger, number 2 from Action Lab. This continued the adventure of, it's kind of like a mercenary guy. He's a pretty awesome dude. The art is, it is a black and white book. The book reads really weird because it's like in landscape mode, like a PowerPoint slide, but it really worked, and the art is absolutely fabulous. I didn't know what to expect. The covers were awesome. The writer is Christopher Mills, and the artist is Rick Burchett. And the third issue has come out, but I haven't read it yet. I will say that the first issue was a lot better than the second, because the first one has all these questions that are raised, and he's being framed for a murder of this mafia type gang lord, and killing the daughter, and he didn't kill her. It turns out to be this other guy that works for him, and this is pretty much that guy going after him after he finds he escaped. So that's what issue two revolves around. It's really good. I'd highly recommend Gravedigger from Action Lab, and it's a Danger Zone title, which means it's for mature readers. But It's not like Zombie Tramp or some of the others. It's just pretty much mature readers because of the violence. So yeah, I'd recommend that. The next one I really enjoyed, and the next few issues, like 9, 10, were even higher than a 4 out of 5 for me. But Gotham by Midnight, I am gonna totally miss this book. It's just the macabre in Gotham, and it's centered around a group of people that work with Jim Corrigan, and it's interesting because they have internal affairs as Kate Spencer, and if you're a DC fan, you'll know that Kate Spencer was a lawyer in the other book. She was in internal affairs, and she was the female Manhunter, which was an awesome series by Mark Andreyko. Highly recommend that series if you can find it. It's like 2 volumes, and it was like one of those critically acclaimed books that it had really low sales, but everybody wrote in, kind of like they did with a Mega Man, and they were able to bring back Manhunter a couple of times. It was kind of like saving Friday Night Lights or Jericho, so they could continue it a little bit further. Like with Jericho, I remember the TV show, they like sent a bunch of peanuts into the into the producer, or who was producing the show, the studio, and they saved that show for at least one more season. But Gotham by Midnight is awesome, and it's by Ray Fox, and he kind of did the supernatural part, Batman Eternal, and Batman Eternal kind of led into this series. And I am going to truly miss it. I really am. It's really an outstanding book. It's Juan Fierro on art. He does a really, really good job. He kind of took over from Temple Smith after Temple Smith did the first 5 issues. And if you're a Spectre fan, the one thing I'll say about the New 52 is they have done a fantastic job with the magic characters, whether it be Justice League Dark, like Frankenstein, all the supernatural and horror characters they really brought to the limelight and did wonders with. Phantom Stranger is my favorite DC book that's been published from the New 52. Trinity of Sin, Pandora, Constantine, Justice League Dark, all of them have been really, really good. In my opinion, it's just that magic doesn't seem to grab a lot of people. But I'll just say, man, they are damn good reads. And this Gotham by Midnight is about the Spectre, who's one of my favorites, my all-time favorites. So, I believe I have every Spectre book except one showcase that's been published. So all of his properly titled Spectre names, like I don't have the Golden Age stuff because that's expensive. But everything in Silver Age and on, I have, including his Adventure Comics. And he's one of my favorite characters, and I love this book. The next one is Captain America, Sam Wilson. This was a controversial book because some idiot on Fox News who doesn't know shit about comics and said he did pretty much said that he was going after Republicans, the Falcon. That's like nonsense. He went after a racist group. Called the Serpent, Sons of the Serpent, who I remember from a really awesome arc in Defenders, and they were like white supremacists. They were like Nazis, if you will. They hated Jews. They hated blacks. They hated anybody that wasn't white. And that's what they kind of represented here. They were just doing a different flavor of them because they were at the border and they were going to kill people that were trying to cross over. And they were trying to act like heroes, and Falcon stopped it. But Falcon is in a weird situation because if you followed Captain America what was it called? All New Captain America, which kind of followed Rick Remender's run on Captain America, where he was in Dimension Z, and he actually had a son where he raised the son of Zola, and this kind of took the place after it when Steve Rogers actually aged, and he aged to an age where he couldn't really do much, and he handed the shield over to Sam, and he's acting as the as Captain America, even though he's got the wings and everything, and we all know him as Falcon. But it was really controversial. You know, you could see the video of it. The writer, Nick Spencer, who's amazing. I had just talked about his Thunder Agents. He's doing this book. He was actually getting death threats because of what he did in this book, and it's ridiculous. And Fox News didn't help with that. But one thing they did help with is publicity is publicity. And the book sold through a lot of retailers because of the controversy. So, yeah, it turned out to be really interesting. But I really enjoyed Captain America, Sam Wilson, number one. And then the next 4 out of 5 at the top, this was the last 4 out of 5, was Grayson 11 and 12, which kind of finished the story arc. And then 12 led him back to Gotham, where he actually confronted all like Batgirl. He confronted Jason Todd. He confronted Tim Drake. He confronted Damian Wayne. That one was obviously the best, and I think it was done really well because those two had grown such a bond when he was Batman, and it was a really cool issue. The only reason it wasn't a 5 out of 5 for me is there was one little pet peeve I had about it, and it's just a pet peeve for me. But they had, if you've seen Harbinger number one, you'll see like Pete on the cover, and there was a lot of like word bubbles where he's actually able to hear everyone's thoughts. Well, this book did something very similar, trying to capture the history of the relationship between whoever they were featuring, like Batgirl and Dick, or Damian and Dick. And then there were all a bunch of bubbles around there. I just thought it distracted from the story, because I ended up reading all of them and then trying to process, where did that happen? Where did that happen? And it kind of distracted the flow a little bit. But other than that, it was like a really, really good book. And then we're jumping to the 5 out of 5s. We got Where Monsters Dwell. The series by Garth Ennis has been, it's just been so fun. It's about the Phantom Eagle, who gets recruited by a female adventurer. Her husband is an adventurer. She plays naive and stupid, but she really knows a lot. She gets him to fly him to this area on Battle World. It's kind of like a mystery island where dinosaurs are and cannibals exist and Amazons exist, and it turns out to be a fun romp and very funny. And it's by Garth Ennis and Russell Braun, and I hope Russell Braun does more comics, because he's like a current Dave Stevens, who did The Rocketeer. And I was trying to see if I could see, like, he did his own inks too, by the way, which is outstanding. But I'm trying to see what he did. He did The Adventures of Ford Fairlane. He did a couple issues of Animal Man, the first series. He did Battlefields. The Boys, he had a few issues of The Boys. Chronicles of Wormwood, Fables and Ferrest, Hellstrom, Son of Satan. That's what I remember him from. That was a Max series. Jack of Fables, Where Monsters Dwell. Yeah, so he did a lot of Fable stuff. And a lot of stuff I haven't read a lot of, like Boys. I have read The Animal Man. I own The Legends of the Dark Knight that he did. I don't have the Battlefield or Ferris. I own those in trade. I just haven't got around to reading them all yet. But highly recommend it. Art is fantastic. Story is Garth Ennis. He's a master at this, and he did another Phantom Eagle series before this, and it's a really weird title. I can't remember. It was a Max series, and it makes me really want to pick that up. I think I have it, but I haven't read it, so I should read it, because if this is anything like that, and it actually has like references in the book to it, so it makes me really curious. The Grayson Annual I really enjoyed because it was Nightwing. It was the relationship between Dick Grayson and Clark Kent, which if you know historically, in Krypton there was a character called Nightwing, and that's where he got his name from. And this goes way back, like to pre-New 52, but they kept the history intact with Grayson, and then kind of just built upon it, even though the Superman is fairly new and kind of like depowered right now. They just did a really good job. The next one is Journey to Star Wars: The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire number 3. Amazing title. That female fighter pilot that they've introduced, and it is absolutely phenomenal. She's actually working with Princess Leia, and they go back to Naboo, and she's just an amazing fighter pilot. They really do a really good job of building her character. The art is awesome. Greg Rucka is awesome telling the story, and it was a 5 out of 5 for me. And then we go to the next one. It's Karnak, which is Warren Ellis. I never thought this would be a 5 out of 5 for me, but it just worked so well. He seems to own his own, like, what is the word I'm looking for? Monastery, maybe, out in the middle of nowhere, and he's training people to be the best they can possibly be. And Karnak's abilities are pretty damn cool. It's like he can detect weakness and exploit any weakness, and it talks about that. And this one has a lot to do with Shield and them asking for his help to go after another Inhuman, and he agrees to do it for the fact that it's an Inhuman, and then also he has some alternative motive. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was an amazing book, and the art really stood out. It worked really well for me, which is weird because I usually don't like Warren Ellis writing for Marvel or DC. I like his independent stuff, but don't care a lot for him on mainstream stuff, especially like Justice League and stuff like that. I think he does really good with these side characters, and so I really enjoyed that, a 5 out of 5. And then Batman and Robin Eternal, the weekly series. I just love the pacing of this book, and this is focusing on all the Robins and the Batgirls of the DC Universe, and they're on this adventure that is obviously going to cross over with War of Robins and everything else. And it's an amazing book. I'd highly recommend it. And if you like, all the Batman events that you've, like Nightfall and Cataclysm, etc., you will dig this. I mean, you will dig it. And it's written in very like that style of writing where everything's connected and the personalities are down packed and everything. So yeah, that wraps up that 1 week. So I did read 14 books, and the next week I hardly read anything. I didn't take any books with me to Albuquerque. I just couldn't. I didn't think about it. And even if I did, I really didn't feel like reading, even in the hospital. I just couldn't get out of the mode that I was in. But my father-in-law got me a bag of comics, And it had a bunch of image stuff, believe it or not. It was like a mystery bag. And I don't remember everything that's in it. I remember it had a Doctor Strange book written by Ann Nesenti, and I didn't read it. But it had Darker Image from Image Comics. And it's been a while since I've read this, so I didn't remember anything about it. And there was only one issue of this, but it's a pretty important issue. It was the first appearance of Deathblow and the first appearance of Max, and it had a story of Bloodwolf, which is a ripoff. Rob Liefeld comes up with some great creations, but he also takes a lot of the creations and, you know, reinvigorates them in his own world. So you'll look at Youngblood or Bloodstrike, and you'll say, "God damn, that's like Deadpool and Cable." And, you know, some of the characters that he puts in those books. Well, you know, Bloodwolf is a ripoff of Lobo, like, flat out. But it was entertaining, and it's in the vein of Lobo. And then there's Sam Keith's Max. This is the first appearance of Sam Keith's Max. And really interesting. This was my favorite of the stories. And it makes me want to go read the reprints now that I'm buying on IDW that I started, but I didn't finish. I think I'm issue 3, but I have been buying them all because I didn't read the original Max. And I find it really interesting because it's so weird. Like, I still don't even have a grasp of what he is. Is he a hero, or is he like a homeless person that just winds up in situations? It's really bizarre. And then this also is the first appearance of Deathblow, which is the Jim Lee creation. So yeah, it was a worthwhile book. There was no sequel to this, but it would have been a good anthology for them, like a showcase, if they chose to exploit it. But they never did, because there was only that one issue in 1993. And you had Sam Keith, William Messner Loebs on Max, Rob Liefeld on Bloodwolf, and Jim Lee and Brandon Choi on Deathblow. So, yeah, it was a pretty cool issue. I gave it a 3 out of 5. And I think it's just because I summed it up as a whole. If I took, like, one individual story out of there, like the Max, I would have definitely been a 4 out of 5, maybe even a 5 out of 5, but I treated it as a whole comic book. What else do we have? This month I only had four, I mean this week, that particular week that I was at the hospital with my dad, there was only 4 comics, 2 DC, 1 Image, and 1 Marvel, and we just talked about the Image. The next one was Agents of Atlas, Secret Wars. It was a weird book because it's a Battle World Secret Wars tie-in, but on the cover it doesn't say anything to that effect. But it was Tom Taylor, and he's a fantastic writer. And that's one of the reasons I picked it up, and I didn't regret it. It was really good. I gave it a 4 out of 5. It has to do with the history of the agents and kind of the legacy of Gorilla and all the, you know, Gorilla Man and a couple other characters, and their battle with Hydra and other characters. So it was worthwhile. And then the 5 out of 5s I read is I finally finished Sweet Tooth, and it was a very good ending. It was good from the very beginning to the very end. Had a very satisfying conclusion. And highly recommend Sweet Tooth, Jeff Lemire on art. Although the most important issues, I think, to Sweet Tooth, Jeff Lemire actually had Matt Kent draw them. So you have Matt Kent on those issues that really fleshed out the backstory of Sweet Tooth in that series. Really good. Highly recommended. 5 out of 5. This was issue 39 and 40, so it was 40 issues of a Vertigo title. And the last thing I'm going to talk about is the numbers for Valiant. You know, I love Valiant, and I thought these numbers for the books sold in October were pretty interesting because it was the final Book of Death month, and the whole purpose of Book of Death was to put extra copies of Book of Death on the shelves, so retailers would have incentive. They get this book, you know, the Geomancer book, which they could sell at whatever price they want for the most part, and it varied all the way, you know, across from cover price to 40 or 50 bucks, depending on the issue. Sometimes there were 10. If it was the second, you know, it was 1 in 25, the first, 1 in 10, the rest of the issues. But the whole purpose was to increase or try to get more Valiant books on the shelf. At least that's what they said it was. And if you look at this last month, it's kind of disappointing because everything settled back to where it normally would be. Yeah, Book of Death was the highest at 23,205 copies. But you got to remember that that was a 1 in 10, and everybody that wanted the Book of Death, Legends of the Geomancer, had to buy a copy of that. They'd have to buy 10, the retailers would have to buy 10 copies just to get one. So if they had four people, you know, that wanted that particular book, they'd have to buy 40 copies, and they wouldn't not necessarily sell those 40 copies if they put them on the shelf. Yeah, they're going to sell it to those four people guaranteed because they want, you know, usually Valiant fans are sometimes all in, and they'd go after it. But well, it ended up being their bestseller, and then their Book of Death tie-ins, like The Fall of Exo, Manowar, it was the lowest selling of the bunch, but they were all fluctuating between 10,000 and 12,000. And Book of Death, it was really high. I think it was like 40,000 or 60,000, and then it settled in around the 20Ks as issue 2 came on, and this one ended it with 23. But what makes this really interesting is when this book is over now, and the two highest selling books for Valiant are done. So what happens next month? That's going to be really interesting. The next book that was rated was Bloodshot Reborn. It dropped below 10,000 copies, but it's still pretty consistent. A steady attrition rate that is pretty normal for where Valiant books lie is under 10,000 and between that and 7,000, and usually things that go below 7,000 are at risk. The next one was Ninjak at 8,100 copies. That was at rank 210. That's my favorite book that they do by Matt Kent, and it sells pretty good. Hopefully it'll keep above the, you know, 7K mark. The next one's a Matt Kent book, Rye, number 11, also one of my favorites, because it's Matt Kent. And then at 232, at 6,923 is Exo Manowar 41, which is around the 7,000, but it dropped below 7,000, which is disappointing because that's like their core title and the only legacy running book. Next is Ivar Timewalker, still consistent, but, you know, really low seller at 5,600 copies. The next one is Unity at 5,429. This has been in the 5,000s for quite some time, and it stayed pretty consistent. But the biggest surprise is that Imperium dropped below Unity, and it sold 5,191 copies, 100. Or 5,191 copies. And it had a star about it. What does that mean? It means some of the books are returnable. So it's probably dropped by 10 to X percent, whatever that magical number on returnability is for Diamond. So it may have, if you add that extra 10% or whatever that percentage is, it may have been above the other two books. And just because of the returnability, they've lowered it to reflect a consistent returnability percentage that they usually see from returns from retailers back to Diamond. I don't know if that returnability factor is based on publisher or if it's kind of just like a global based on returnability for any publisher. That'd be interesting to know. And then the trades, Harbinger kicked ass. Volume 1 sold another 2,982 copies. And that's on in addition to what it sold the first time. So when they re-release these, there's still a lot of demand to get those first volumes. But as you go down in the volumes, like Drop Dead, it only sold 870, and Time Walker Volume 2 only sold 752. So the numbers are pretty low. And if they re-release a high number trade, I don't know if they'd have as much success as they do with the first volumes. But the first volume seems like they may have some evergreen status because if they release it, every other year or something like that, they may get another 2,000 readers to give that book a try. So yeah, the trade sold really well. But those were the numbers. And the last thing I want to mention is I was kind of disappointed that Cullen Bunn decided to quit Aquaman because of the negative feedback he was getting by fans. I guess it really got to him, and he just didn't want to write Aquaman anymore. In other words, it took a writer, a creator that was excited to do a character, and then, he wasn't as successful as some of the, well, Geoff Johns, obviously. But I think it was just as good, me personally, as Jeff Parker's run. I don't consider it any different. And the last two issues, I think, were really solid. I really enjoyed where they went with it. Just took a while to get there, but it just goes to show that if writers or artists pay attention to this instant stuff on Twitter and Facebook and podcasts and stuff, it could be discouraging enough for them to quit. I kind of wish you would just said, "Fuck you, I'm gonna finish telling my story. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. But I'm going to get from point A to point B what I was hired to do and not quit." But the good news is, especially if you loved Geoff Johns' run on Aquaman, is the original creative team is going to be back on Aquaman, Ivan Reis and Geoff Johns. So it's going to be another solid book and go back up to what we expect. Of that character. So yeah, I was disappointed to see that he's cutting his arc short, but he's gonna get us to issue 50, and we'll see what he does with it. Hopefully he's gonna it probably won't change a lot of status quo, but hopefully he gets to tell the full story that he wanted to tell. And that's all I wanted to talk about. I will talk to you next week where I've already read books for next week. I just got to record the episode and I'll talk to you soon. The other stuff I forgot is if you want to get a hold of me, this podcast is posted on geekbrunchpodcast.com. You could post comments on the episode thread there, or you can go to Facebook under Geek Brunch Podcast with spaces in between the words and click the like button on that, and you can post on those episode threads. Or you can send me email at mike@comicbooknoise.com or leave an iTunes review at Geek Brunch Podcast and say you're leaving it for Mike M's Weekly Reads. And that's about it. Thank you. Bye.